The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I wanted to read a little bit from my translation of the Book of Eights, this ancient... Some people say it's maybe the oldest teachings of the Buddha, the first teachings of his, before Buddhism was systematized into all its lists and kind of formalized into what became a religion. If it does come from the early days of the Buddhist teachings, it kind of has a purity to it, or a simplicity to it, and a radicalness to it that I think is very much alive still today, because in many ways it kind of pulls the rug from underneath all kinds of attachments and orientations that people often have, especially people when they engage in religion. And this idea, it's very refreshing to have all our attachments kind of pulled away. It's kind of nice, I think. So I wanted to read a little bit from a chapter that's called The Discourse on the Ultimate. Now that's pretty promising. You know, who doesn't want to know what the ultimate is and learn about it? So this now, so be on the edge of your seat, ready, you know, this, you get the core teachings. A lot of this teaching focuses on views, and the word views is really in the ancient world means doctrines, religious doctrines, how we the philosophical views which we approach our life. But many people in the West don't feel like they have particular doctrines or views they live by, because somehow, you know, we think we're free of it. But in fact, many times they're unconscious. They're very deeply seated. The unconscious assumptions about our life, which are, you know, philosophical at its root or something. But if you, if every time you hear the word views, you could interpret it in your mind as stories, and that we live in stories, and we have stories about things, and those stories is kind of how we orient ourselves to understand what's going on. So the major theme, this is the introduction of the, before reading the poem, the major theme of the discourse on the ultimate is the avoidance of views, which is stated most explicitly in the instruction not to construct, prefer, or take up any doctrine. Or the major theme in the discourse on the ultimate is avoidance of stories, which is stated most explicitly in the instruction not to construct, prefer, or take up any story. Instead, this poem advocates such a thorough letting go that a person no longer relies on any view, any story, any doctrine, including existential ideas of existence and non-existence, either in this life or the next. And so, like, what's left if you're not thinking about existing or not existing? I mean, that's kind of like, where do you stand if you don't, you know? You kind of like to exist, most people. So that seems like a good thing, but some people don't want to not exist, and so they're negotiating the world of existing and not existing. And here it says, let go of any kind of concern with existing and not existing. What's left? If one isn't holding on to views, then one would never have a reason to claim that one's own doctrines are ultimate, or that someone else's are inferior. So this is kind of a funny thing. The title of the is on Discourse on What's Ultimate, and then what it says about what's ultimate is, don't get caught up thinking about what's ultimate. Especially around doctrines and religious teachings, the whole idea that, you know, that I have the ultimate teachings, that Buddhism has the ultimate teachings, or my teacher has the ultimate teachings, and everyone else is inferior. According to this, that's just more stories and views and attachments to get caught up in. And this is one of the reasons why this kind of teaching is a little bit radical, because it seems pretty second nature for people to gravitate towards those teachings they think are the best, you know, the highest, the greatest, the whatever. So if one isn't holding on to views, onto stories, into doctrine, then one would never have a reason to claim that one's own doctrines are the ultimate and then someone else's are inferior. In the same way, one wouldn't think of oneself as superior, equal, or inferior to others. Any view that serves as the basis for such comparisons is called an entanglement. So not only are views, unnecessary to thinking about our views, our doctrines are better than others and others are worse, to think that you're better than others, that you're superior, or that you're inferior, is just more entanglement, more attachments to be caught up in. And then this fascinating idea that even thinking that you're equal is a problem. And so what's left? You're not supposed to think about existence or non-existence. You're not supposed to be attached to what's ultimate and what's the best or what's inferior. And you're not supposed to think of yourself as being superior, inferior, or equal to others. So, like, it doesn't leave you with anything. What's that? That's not good. You know, you want to come to IMC and go home with something. So instead of doing this, taking anything as ultimate, rather one shouldn't depend on anything. If one is holding on to anything, one should let go. With its thorough emphasis on letting go, this discourse, as is true for most of this book, advises against any religious observance or practice except letting go. And that's also a little challenging. People who come to religion or to Buddhism want practices and things they can do. And this book, the title I gave the book is The Buddha Before Buddhism. But this book emphasizes that doesn't emphasize anything. No practices, nothing to do, nothing to believe, nothing to hold on to, except letting go. Is that good enough to be left with nothing to hold on to or to believe? Or, you know, I mean, that's, it's like pretty, doesn't leave you anywhere. So here's some of the verses. Having views about what is ultimate, a person makes these the best in the world and calls all other views inferior. As such, they have not gone beyond quarreling. Seeing benefit in the self or in things seen, heard, or thought or in precepts and religious practices and then grasping at this, a person then sees all else as inferior. What one relies on in order to see all else as inferior is an entanglement, say those who are skilled. One should therefore not depend on things seen, heard, or thought out, or on virtue and religious observances. Doesn't leave much for religious people to do. One should not think of themselves as inferior or superior to others, and they shouldn't take themselves as equal either. Letting go of what is taken up, the person free of grasping doesn't depend on knowledge or take sides when factions disagree or fall back on any kind of view. When one not inclined to either side of existence or non-existence, to this world or the next, there exists nothing to get entrenched in when considering the doctrines others grasp. Here, one does not conceive the slightest concept in regard to what is seen, heard, or thought. How in this world could one categorize the Brahman who does not take hold of views? So then, not holding on to stories, not holding on to views, not being attached to anything seen, heard, or thought about. Heard means anything you read, because they didn't have books back then, so hearing is how you got teachings. But nowadays we say read, maybe. Or hear in teachings. So how do you categorize the person who does not hold on to any views? How do you see them? How do you understand such a person? Such a one does not construct, prefer, or take up any doctrine. Such a one does not construct, prefer, or take up any story. Such a person is not led by precepts or religious practices. A person not led by precepts and religious practices who has gone beyond does not fall back on belief, is one who is thus. So the whole poem ends. So it talks about all these things, you know, just let go. Don't depend on knowledge, don't depend on views, on doctrines, on stories. Don't even depend on the normal things which people depend on for religious life. Don't depend on practices, virtue, ethics. Don't depend on any of it. Don't be attached to any of it. Don't get caught up in ideas of you're better than others, or your religion is better than others, or others are worse than yours. Don't be concerned with whether you exist or don't exist. Don't be concerned about next life or this life. What's left? I mean, it seems like very little space to kind of exist then. But the person who does this has gone beyond all limitations. And the only way you can categorize this person, the only way you can refer to them or describe such a person, is with a very imprecise title, thus. The person is thus. So it's like, you know, if you came to someone and said, you know, tell me who you really are, and the person just kind of stands there and opens their arms and say, I'm thus. This is how it is. Just this. Maybe there doesn't need to be any more definition than that. Maybe there doesn't need to be to limit ourselves by some kind of title or some kind of opinion or some kind of identity that we have. You know, just thus. It seems very imprecise, but it's also very freeing. Imagine someone loves you, and you say, why do you love me? And then they go through an exact list. The particular clothes that you wear, they have that opinion, you cook this kind of good food. Those are the reasons why I love you. Like, it's probably, you know, okay, but that's not what you want to be known by. But they say, why do you love me? And the person says, because you're just how you are. That's kind of, you're not defined or limited. You're just kind of like, you can relax then. Oh, you don't even know who you are. But, you can just, oh, okay. So thus, just to be thus. So someone who's free is just thus. And we can, it's a way of being very generous to other people. Just thus. And not to live in this swirl and whirl of opinions and stories and ideas and judgments that human life is so much caught up in. Don't depend on views, don't depend on knowledge, don't depend on even ethics, but be ethical. But don't depend on it, don't hold on to it, don't hold on to anything. That's this radical message from the time of the earliest teachings of the Buddha. I like to call it the Buddha before Buddhism, before we have Buddhism, which is just another religion that's better than all the other better religions. All the other, you know, just all the systems and all that. It's just thus. So can you be thus? Can you let go of all your stories and all your views and allow yourself just to be thus? Okay, thank you. And.